MacCast, Saturday, September 7th, 2013. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, I got a cool show for you today because we are right around the corner from Apple's September 10th announcement that everybody is expecting new iPhones at, as well as hearing about the final specs and the release date of iOS 7. And I wanted to get someone on the show, and been wanting to get him back on the show actually for a really long time, and that's Clayton Morris. Clayton is an anchor for Fox and Friends, for Fox News. He also is well connected in the Apple and tech communities, and he has some great sources. In this past week, he has released some details about specifically the iPhone 5S. So I wanted to get Clayton on, get his opinions on some of the latest rumors and speculation and things leading up to the September 10th announcement, and we were able to sit down and do that. So I'm looking forward to bringing you this show. But before we dive into that, I do need to take a quick moment and thank a couple of our show sponsors. The first one is Gazelle. You know, that new iPhone is coming, and Gazelle wants to buy your used iPhone. They want to give you cash for your old iPhone. And for a limited time, what they're allowing you to do is lock in today's price on your iPhone, giving you until October 15th to send it in. So that should give you plenty of time. Hopefully, we don't know the official release date yet, but that should be plenty of time for the new iPhone to hit the street. You can get your new device and then send it in and get cash that'll likely cover the cost or a large portion of the cost of your upgrade. They also take iPods and Android devices as well, so you can get cash for that stuff too. And that's cash you can use for that upgrade. And they have made the process so simple. It really couldn't be easier. All you do is go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. You do a quick search for your item. You tell them a little bit about the condition, the accessories that you have. They'll even buy broken iPhones. So don't worry if it's broken, it might be worth some cash. Just you can check it out on Gazelle and you get a risk-free offer, and they offer free shipping. Plus, you'll get paid fast. So when you send it in, you can get paid by check, by PayPal, or by Amazon gift card. And if you do the Amazon gift card, they give you another 5% for the value of your item. So payments are fast, typically within a few days of receiving your item. They'll wipe your data for free, and they've paid out more than $100 million to over 600,000 customers. And on top of all that, you get that free shipping, and many items even qualify for a free box. So just go to gazelle.com now and get an offer on your iPhone. Lock in your price until October 15th and do it now, because every day you wait, that iPhone might lose a little bit of value. So head over to gazelle.com, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. I'd also like to thank Squarespace. You know, Squarespace is an all-in-one platform. It makes it really easy and fast to create your own professional website, blog, online portfolio, e-commerce site. They have all of the tools that you need to get a website up and running quickly, and they have it all in one place. If you need a website now, you need it today, you don't even have to think about it. Just go to squarespace.com and sign up. I think I've mentioned it before. I have used Squarespace for some of my sites. I'm a programmer. I can code this stuff in HTML, but sometimes you just don't want to bother with that. You don't want to take the hassle of having to do all that stuff. You just need a website up, and you need it up quickly. Maybe you don't have the budget. Maybe you don't have the resources. There can be lots of reasons. Maybe you just want something that's good, but you don't want to have to get caught up in all the little details that are going to slow you down. And that's why Squarespace is such a great option. They handle everything. They have great designs and templates that are all mobile ready. They look awesome. You have full customization tools, so you can get all the widgets and things that you need on your site. If you need a map, if you need a form, you need e-commerce, it's all in there. It's drag and drop. You can just put it all together. You can lay it out how you want, and they handle hosting and domain registration. When you sign up for a year, you can even get that for free. Plus, if you get stuck, they have 24/7 tech support. It's done by human beings. They're in New York, real people, not computers, not automated bots. You can send support requests, and they will help you out. And like I said, I'm a programmer. I even use it because once you want to get beyond just the simple templates. If you want to dive in, if you want to really get into the technology, you can still do that too. They allow you to fully customize your HTML, your CSS, your JavaScript, so you can really do as much or as little as you want on the platform. And did I mention it's really affordable? They have plans starting at just like $8 a month. And if you sign up for a year, I already mentioned you get a domain name for free. Plus, right now, this month, don't wait. If you've been holding off, now's the time to try. You can get a free trial, or you can get 20% off for just this month. That's double what we have been offering by going to squarespace.com and using the offer code MACCAST9. So that's squarespace.com. Use the offer code MACCAST9. You're going to save 20% off your order. And a huge thank you to Squarespace as well as Gazelle for supporting the MACCAST. So let's dive into the interview. I mentioned Clayton and I sat down. We talked about some of the upcoming rumors leading into the event next week. I also forgot to tell you that Clayton also recently has been developing an application. So I wanted, for you would-be application developers out there, I wanted to talk to him about that process, because Clayton's not a programmer. He's an idea guy, but he had this great idea. He assembled a team and went through the process of building this app. They have a new update that just came out. They now released a version for iPhone. The app is called ReadQuick. You'll hear about it more in the episode, but stay tuned for that as well. And I think you're really going to like this one. Hey, Clayton, how you doing?
Oh, I have been great, man. It's been way too long since
we last talked. Way too long. Yeah, we were just talking, and it's like, I don't even know how many years since we've had you on the show. And you've been doing a lot since then, especially in the Apple side of things, I think.
Yeah, I certainly have. And it's been to be on the other side of the curtain, so to speak. You know, I get to cover it as a journalist, but now, you know, to be an app developer, or I guess, do I get to be called a developer if I?
Yeah, you do. I think technically you do. I think if you're involved in the whole process, and we're going to get into this later, because I want to talk about I'm in this iOS group, and the guy who started it, I guess we can get into it a little bit now, but the guy who started it came up with a concept that he calls ICAM, and it stands for ideas. He's going to be so mad at me if I get this wrong. Ideas, coding, art, and marketing. And so sort of the four pillars of designing and building apps as we see it. And so the group is sort of founded around not just developers, because there's a lot of developer, like coder groups. You know, typically when people say developer, they think coders. But in app development, you really need all four of those disciplines to kind of come together. You have to have the idea. And sometimes, you know, it's the same person with the idea and the coding, or the idea and the art. But very rarely are you going to find one person who can do it all and do it all really well.
Right.
And
yeah, it's very rare that you're getting the guy who can both code, develop, and then also get the word out about the app. I learned, you know, we can talk about that later, but I learned, I mean, knee deep in that whole process has been fascinating for new developers who are interested in this. Boy, I can tell you some stories.
Yeah, and we're going to dive into that at the end of the show, but there's tons of stuff I want to get to and get your opinions on. I mean, I follow this stuff, you follow this stuff, and we've been talking a lot on the MACCAST about the upcoming event, and we now actually have a date. I'm assuming you got your invitation. September 10th is, and everybody knew it was official, right? But Apple made it official today.
Yeah, absolutely. I got my invitation today, this morning, bright and early. I even said to my wife, I said, mark the clock. Let's check, because I bet by 10 a.m. or 11 a.m., you know, East Coast time, we'd get an invitation. And sure enough, there it was. Everybody, what was the, oh, here
this
it is.
Should brighten everybody's day, or everyone's day. We got to get
everyone's day. This should brighten everyone's day. So all the colorful imagery there,
little which is dots.
Yeah. Dots, and obvious that it's an iPhone. And you know what I love too, and some of my reporting, and I know from sources at Apple, and looking at this invitation now again, mm-hmm. You see all the different colors there, right? So obviously that's the 5C. Well, what's the one with the silver ring around it? Well, I've as I heard from sources, I had mentioned this on Twitter a few weeks back, that all I know about the new design, what I had heard, is that there would be a silver ring around the home button. And here you go, a little hula hoop there, a little silver hula hoop, you know, empty ring there. What's the empty one? And that's the, that's got to be the 5S, right?
Fingerprint scanner, home button thing.
Yeah.
So are your sources saying, I mean, do you believe it's the they're going to get that fingerprint scanner in there? Because we heard all this rumor and speculation that, you know, it was giving them fits and all kinds of trouble. And, you know, is it going to be there? Is it not going to be there?
You know, I mean, I hate hedging my bets like this because we know what happened with the iPod Touch camera a few years ago. It was, you know, there was the chamber there. It was suddenly yanked. But all of my sources have said that, you know, this thing had been rigorously tested for months and months and months, you know, hooked up to different machines with all sorts of every kind of variation of test you could imagine, some of which I can't even go into,
right?
That I've kept quiet about. But it's actually been really fascinating, the types of tests they've been doing on this. And so I can't imagine that it won't be there. And I think that'll be a main differentiator between the 5S and the 5C, right? Yeah. Why? I mean, what you've got to have that premium thing, right? Like with Siri. In the 4S over the 4, why would I get the 4S? You know, yeah, who cares about a processor, right? I mean, the average consumer doesn't really know about it. But, oh, I want that Siri. I want that marketable thing that you're going to see in the commercials for the holidays. And if they do not have that fingerprint scanner in there, I don't know that people are going to care that much about a new camera.
Yeah, or a couple new tints.
Yeah,
we call them colors or tints at this point.
Yeah, I guess if we're going to see the steel color. Now, I know nothing of these other colors, so
the gold seems likely, right?
At this point. Yeah, the gold. Yeah, and then what's the latest one we've been hearing about is a steel color. Now that makes a lot of sense. Do you have the five?
I have the five. Yeah, this graphite. I was saying on the last episode that I really like the two tone graphite color.
You know, yeah,
that it plays up the dichotomy between the plastic and the steel, and it actually harkens in my mind a little bit back to the original first gen iPhone with that little, you know, it had the little black plastic piece that was where the antenna was, right? And so you had the silver back and then the little black piece. So this is obviously more in those gray tones.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because with the 5. I do not have yet the 5S. I get a new one. I think I've had like four of these now, and I've, you know, scratched them a number of times. And of course, around the edges here, the chamfered, you know, edges on this.
Right.
I've certainly scratched it, even with a new one. You know, even with a case, they're always just like a little chip, a little ding. No matter what you do, you barely touch it next to your keys in your pocket or some change. You've got the chips on it in the back. And so I could imagine that steel color alleviating this problem, so I don't have to worry about black. It'll already come in the chipped color, you know?
Yeah. So you think it's going to replace the black? Because that was one of the theories, I think, John Gruber, somebody was throwing out that possibly this replaces the actual slate and black version.
I don't know. I'd have to think that they're not. I mean, how many colors do you want in the premium version, right? If the 5C is the colorful fun, you know, colorful fun low cost version, I think you keep the premium to. So that, you know, people know that it's the premium when they see it. You know, a three perhaps. I guess this would probably get rid of it. I think they've had so many issues. And, you know, I think that Apple is aware of all the scratches. And I know we had heard all the stories about Steve Jobs hating all the scratches on the rounded backs of the 3 and the 3GS.
Mm-hmm.
Right. With the plastic back.
Right. And so, yeah, those would get scuffed up pretty good.
Yeah. So I have to think that might be the case.
Yeah, I think they would want to opt for less choices. It was even interesting to me just the number of choices we were hearing about with the 5C. And I'm a little curious about why they're even doing that. Like, do they actually need the colors? Because historically, it seems to cause inventory problems for them because they suddenly have to figure out which colors are going to be the popular colors. You kind of got to hedge your bets a little bit, and eventually consumers will sort of pick. But then you've got all this weird stocking stuff you have to deal with, right? You have to have the right number of each color based on consumer demand. So I know that gets a little bit tricky, but maybe the supply chain is such now where it's so on demand in terms of order inventory and stuff like that, that it doesn't really matter as much. I don't really know.
Yeah. I like to think though that, you know, I want the color to be, I don't want it to chip. I get this brand new phone. I hate to have putting a case on it.
Right.
And I like the phone the way it is. I don't want it just simple everyday wear and tear, just keeping it in my pocket. Just laying it on the counter, I get a chip on it. It really drives me nuts, and I get bothered by it when I when I see a little chip on my phone. I feel, and then I constantly rubbing that little portion of it with my finger. I mean, this is neurotic. I mean,
you do know this. It's so funny because you're describing exactly the kind of thing I would do. And I, for the longest time, I never had a case on my iPhone, and with the 5. With the 5, I had to. I mean, I literally had to. And I was so glad the day, this sounds horrible, but I was so glad the day my home button started failing. Or no, it was the sleep-wake button. My sleep-wake button started failing. It would not trigger reliably. And luckily, I was under Apple Care, and I took it in. And the guy's like, yeah, it's not working. We're going to swap it out. And I was like, yes, because the chamfered edge on my phone was so dinged up. And it's like, oh, I got a new pristine one. And I've been able to keep it because this went right into a case, and my first one didn't. So this one went right into a case. So far, knock on wood, it's looking nice still. But I know exactly what you're saying. I'm gonna nick it. I'm gonna, you know, be picking it up and hit it on the edge of something at some point, and then just do the same thing. You rub your finger over that. You're like, no, that's a nick. That's not coming out.
Yeah. Oh, even with a case, I've had one of those plastic, I forget the name of the case. I test so many of these cases, and one of the ones I really liked was just a clear, thin, slim, you couldn't even tell it was on there. But then like a little debris gets in between it. You pop it out to put it on some sort of a charger or something, and then like you put slide it back on, and it was the case itself had scuffed the chamfered edge. Like it scratched off
that part too with certain cases. Yeah.
Yeah, because if you have to pop it on and off, then you you want to make sure it fits on a dock. I'm gonna have a couple, you know, I have an iHome like alarm clock, and I'll set it on there to charge. There's other places where it might not fit because of the case is on it, and so you're popping it off once in a while. Of course, it gets all dust and debris back there. And actually, there was a company I interviewed at CES. They made this like weird orange. Well, their thing was like this orange putty, but it came in all kinds of different colors. It was sort of like, hey, it was like that. What was that movie with Robin Williams?
Flubber. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what their display looked like. You know, it was more fun to just play with on camera, right? You picked up this flubber stuff they had you take a sledgehammer to it and nothing happened to it. Then they made cases out of this stuff in different colors, I think, but mostly like an orange. They explained that a lot of these other cases, these sort of, these plastic cases, these polycarbonate cases that people are putting their phones in, actually create more of a shockwave.
More vibration,
More of a vibration. It's more of, so when you drop it, it's actually, you're less likely to have your case or your iPhone shatter without the case on it. Put it in this case, it lands on the cement, you're more likely to have some sort of a problem. And I think they're right, in my experience. Unless you get one of those big life-proof cases, but then it's like, why bother?
I see people with those. Well, I guess if you know you're going to be klutzy, it's a way to go.
Yeah,
yeah. So through Twitter, I saw you all over the place like a couple weeks ago. You had some info on the new processor. So these things are going to be significantly faster, you think?
I think so. Yes. From what I'm hearing, from what my sources are telling me, that this thing will be a screamer, and that's those are specific words. This thing will be flying fast,
like 31% faster.
Yeah, roughly, upwards of 30, over 30. Uh-huh. I know Apple has a tendency to round down on their slides during these events, so. It may be 31, it may be 32, maybe even a little bit higher, but they have a tendency to round down. So I think, Apple likes round numbers. So I wouldn't be surprised that we see 30% on a slide.
The thing I commented on, I'm curious to get your take on, and I don't know how you do this without revealing if you're running iOS 7 or not, but I'm sure you've seen it running at the very least. So let's just go with that. And you know, someone was saying, well, you know, it's going to be faster and you're going to have no problems with, you know, scrolling or any of the animations or the transparency thing that things that iOS 7 is doing. But I've seen iOS 7 running on some devices and I haven't noticed it being particularly, you know, sluggish or non-fluid or, you know, any of those sorts of things. So I'm a little bit curious, you know, what are they going to use all this extra horsepower for? And I'm assuming they're getting that extra horsepower out of a new A7 without compromising battery life at all. I mean, Apple typically wants to increase battery life when they move to a new processor rather than reduce it. And they would very often give up speed to make that happen, I would imagine.
Right. And I think we saw a lot of these hints, right, in iOS 7 at WWDC and battery, you know, smart. I think it's going to be all signs towards efficiency. So when I say the benchmarks that I've been hearing about from my sources are across the board 30% increases. So not just speed, but battery efficiency, you know, all the benchmarks. Well, we saw some of that, though, at WWDC, obviously, with the power consumption, apps doing auto updating and background processes so that the apps that you're using the most are ready to go for you. There are things happening when you're not using the phone to conserve energy. I know, obviously, Apple is all about that, right? Trying to make sure that the battery life is as efficient as possible. They're trying to squeeze as much juice as they can out of that tube of toothpaste.
Yep.
So yeah,
they've gotten very good at it. Very, very good at it.
Yeah. I mean, we certainly saw with the MacBook Pros a few years ago, right? The battery design, I think Mansfield was primarily in charge of, right? Where they were like that new battery design, which it filled up just about every possible open space within inside the aluminum body.
Yeah, it's really becoming almost Apple's secret sauce. I mean, Android's made lots of strides and improvements, and I have lots of friends who really love their Android phones. But the one complaint I always get, and I know this is changing on different models, it depends on the model you have, but in general, the one thing I'll hear from them is they say, the only thing I really wish was that the battery lasted longer.
Yeah, I mean, I have the HTC One sitting right here, and I love that phone. However, the battery life is terrible, really, really bad. And sure, you can go in and do some all sorts of customization if you want. But look, let's be honest, people aren't doing that. You can turn off all sorts of things. And yes, if you're that advanced, I guess you could do all that.
You can maximize it.
But even still, even with doing some of that customization stuff, going to sleep when you don't need it to and other things, it's still not a good battery. Or it's still not, you know, it's still not efficient. I will say the scrolling on Android still drives me nuts. But I have the Moto X sitting right here. Mm-hmm. And man, that thing just sips battery.
It has been optimized, right, for battery. But it's not quite as powerful as some of the other models, right?
No, it's not. But it's got a Snapdragon processor in it. But I really don't notice much of a lag anywhere. Again, scrolling in Android is still... I still find it laggy, regardless of the processor.
On more powerful phones. Well, see, that's just it. And I think consumers are starting to realize, and this is something that I think we as iPhone users have always just had. So you don't think about it, you know, being an Apple Mac person, you know, someone with an iPhone is like, you don't have to think about battery because Apple thinks so hard about battery. And you don't have to think about smooth scrolling because Apple wants to ensure it's going to have smooth scrolling regardless of the processor. So they're doing stuff in the operating system to tweak and make sure that happens. Whereas you've got these big, beefy, powerful phones that have these massive processors and massive GPUs and, you know, quad cores. And then you hear these things like, well, the scrolling's still not smooth. And you sort of scratch your head going, really? So right. It sounds like Google and Motorola sat down with this Moto X and really gave it more of an Apple thought process, right? Like, let's make sure, let's not worry how many gigahertz the processor is per se, or how, you know, let's just make the experience we want to have in terms of battery life, in terms of usability and all those sorts of things. So I've heard good things on that end. But I mean, again, the tech guys, the Android guys who get in all into the specs, that's the complaint you hear with the Moto X, or at least in the reviews I was reading, it's like, oh, well, it's not the best phone out there. It doesn't have the best display and it doesn't have the best processor per se.
Right. I kind of get into an argument with someone on, and backed up my point pretty well, I thought, when I got in this argument with someone who I said, you know, it's not a Retina display. And by all accounts, it is, right? It's 1080 by 720. So I have a hard time telling the difference, but it's still an AMOLED display. So right. For me, you know, colors are just way oversaturated. I've just never been a fan of AMOLED screens. And so I'm even looking at some of these apps I have here, even like the Flipboard colors or even the Chrome app icon. It's just this oversaturated mess of green and red and oranges in the Umano app icon. So colors are just still do not – they just bleed too much, and I just don't think the screen looks as good, nowhere near as sharp as the iPhone 5 screen. And it does not look as good as the HTC One. But to your point – you know, as a developer, I mean, I have seen iOS 7 running on an iPhone 5, and I don't see lagginess anywhere. From what I've seen reported, I have not seen lagginess in iOS 7 running on the A6 chip at all. And I was, you know, I was worried about that, certainly in a lot of the transition and the graphical transitions and with a lot of the parallax stuff that's happening in iOS 7 and a lot of the refinements that have come over the beta releases have really made some significant improvements I've been seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm kind of thinking, you know, that extra processor is going to come in really handy for higher power applications, things like games, things like audio processing for Siri and dictation features. I don't know how much the fingerprint scanner will rely on that sort of stuff, but image processing, especially, you know, with like photos, I think photo quality is going to be brought up more with maybe some new chips and some better image processing on the software side of things, more so than we've heard some people think they might bump the megapixels on the camera. I think for Apple, again, they're going to figure out what the best match of processor to technology is, right? So they don't, if it's 8 megapixel gives you the best image with a great signal processing chip, then that's what they're going to do. If 12 is better and it doesn't, you know, dramatically decrease the battery life and they don't have to make compromises, I think that's the way they go, right? That's sort of how they make their decisions.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the secret sauce for Apple is in the software. And I'm still telling you, my desk is a mess because I have it filled with phones right now. I mean, it's a good time to be a consumer. And I guess that's my point, testing right. all these phones. But I've got the Nokia Lumia 1020 here as well. And boy, iOS, you know, let me just say this about Windows and the Windows phone experience. I thought when it came out, wow, this is gorgeous. This is the first competitor to iOS that I'm really excited to play with. I got really excited about it. You know, and because of the lack of applications that I needed and relied on, I couldn't live in that world for too long. I enjoyed testing it for a long time and had a bunch of the different Lumia phones and all shapes and sizes. But this new Lumia 1020 with the 41 megapixel camera, as an amateur photographer myself, I was excited to play with it. And the camera is gorgeous. It takes beautiful photos. But when you look at the secret sauce in iOS for image processing, it's not that much better. Minimally better is the Lumia 1020.
Right. That's what I've been hearing as well.
It is remarkable. So you can throw as many megapixels as you want. And, you know, Nokia has done some incredible things with their image processing in this camera.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I mean, it is remarkable that an 8 megapixel, 1 year old phone up against this brand new camera is still as good as it is. And I'm talking about, I don't know that any camera is as good as the iPhone when it comes, or, you know, a smartphone when it comes to white balance. In every situation, it's just getting the right color. And I can take a Moto X out, I can take some photos, and it's just, you know, I'll still get some stuff blown out. I'm telling you, even the HTC One takes good photos, but they're still actually, let me say this. The Samsung Galaxy S4, people are turning out orange in my photos. And, you know, next to the iPhone, still a year old, still king of the hill.
Yeah. 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 And that's really key. So Let's get back into iOS 7 a little bit. And this is going back a ways, because when it was first launched, right, the big complaint being sort of levied at Apple is, well, they got to do something radical. They got to do something new. iOS is getting stale. And so WWDC comes and they show off iOS 7. And then it was sort of immediately, oh, well, that's, you know, people either loved it or hated it. It was like, that's horrible and awful, or that's awesome. You know, what overall, what do you think of iOS 7 and how it progressed? And second to that, you know, do you think Apple needed to do this? Is, you know, is this just putting a coat of paint on things, or is there something more significant here?
I think it is something more significant. I'm thinking about my dad, who's 79, who uses an iPhone. He's been using one since the 3G, I believe. And then we got him. He had the 3G, and then we got him the 4S for Father's Day last year for his birthday. And he, you know, he loves it, and he still, you know, he'll pop over to, you know, have some questions here and there. And why can't I hear this voicemail? I thought it was here. And he gets it confused sometimes with a text message, you know, but still, I mean, the fact that he's using this PC in his pocket, he'll read the New York Times when alerts come through, and he'll like mention to my mom, oh, look, you know, Congress is voting on Syria tonight. You know, I'm impressed, you know, and he gets it. I am worried that he is going to find it confusing.
Yes. Yeah. My wife has already told me I don't want it. Can I not have it? She's like, I'm happy. I know how to do everything on my device now. I know what everything looks like. I know where stuff is. I know how it works. And this is going to just, she's in the same kind of feeling. And she's not, you know, she's fairly tech savvy. She knows how to use stuff. She can program the VCR, you know. It's not like that sort of thing. It's just I think a lot of consumers don't like change. So it's interesting you bring up that point, because I have the same sort of concern where you know, someone who's new to an iPhone, new customers are going to be thrilled. They're going to be fine with it because it's just going to be the thing, right? But Apple has a large installed base of non-technical users that really dislike their devices, and we know at what kinds of rates Apple gets people to upgrade, because everybody's going to get that little alert, and you're going to have people like my wife and some of her friends who aren't in the know. They don't follow Apple stuff. They're just going to sit, oh, an update, and their whole phone is going to become this whole new thing. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
I think it really is visually stunning. And I think the improvements are significant from a visual standpoint. And I have, you know, it's a complete design, you know, overhaul.
Right.
What I was saying about Windows Phone was, I thought when Windows Phone came out, wow, this is the operating system. You know, like, this is the one, man. This is, you know, making iOS look stale, makes Android look stale. This is, wow, this is gorgeous, you know? Yeah. After I started looking at iOS 7 and spending time looking at it, and then I picked up a Windows Phone again, I thought, wow, this really makes Windows Phone look flat and stale. There was something visually new and compelling about iOS 7 that I didn't get from this, what I thought was a pretty revolutionary operating system from Microsoft.
They did a really nice job with it.
You know? Yeah. And so here's what I think, though. Here's just a little anecdote. And I don't know if this holds much weight or not, but for instance, my one-year-old daughter, she's just now calling Pat-Pat, you know, for iPad. Yeah, that's cute. And, you know, my son has called it Pad for a couple of years, and he's completely efficient with it. You know, he knows where to go in, what folders to find, what videos within the videos folder to find. He's three. She already knows she can grab her mom's iPhone, and just, she knows the slide bar to slide to unlock. Mm-hmm. And she gets it. You know, it's just very easy. Just visually, she just gets it. She's able to already figure out what, you know, monkey preschool lunchbox app she wants to use. I handed her an iOS 7 device, and she couldn't figure out how to open it, even though I had to show her that while there's no actual I don't know if you call it skew. It's not really a skew. More,
you know, you had a thing that slid, right? You had a thing that was obviously something you could touch or tap on, or, you know, looked at like it, at least, that you could slide. Yeah.
Right. So are we visually now past the point of having someone handhold us?
And
you know what I mean?
It's interesting you bring that point up, because I think that's exactly it. And so what I was going to say about all those people that are going to, you know, upgrade day one and they're not aware of the size of the visual changes, mm-hmm. they're going to go through, I think there's going to be a shock period, right? There's going to be this, oh my gosh, I don't know how to use this thing. I don't know where stuff is. I mean, major stuff like the fact that the search screen's not off to the left anymore.
Right. You right. Know? Is there, oh, so there's not something telling me I need to tap on this piece of text.
I would imagine that maybe Apple, hopefully the first time it installs, has thrown in some quick, hey, you know, here's, and they've done that before. Hopefully they don't have to do too much of that because it can get annoying, but just some, you know, slight little indicators. Hey, you've been upgraded, you know, the sort of like the, for, like what you had the first time you set it up, right? They sort of walk you through slide here to do this and that, you know, simple little, you know, four-step walkthrough. Here's some of the major changes where you find this stuff. I think at the very least, they're going to need to help tell people on the search thing. But even if they don't, the point I was getting to is, if Apple can get these people past that initial shock, what you're talking about, which is what I call sort of this gesture language, Apple has trained everybody for the past 5 years, 6 years on a gesture language, right? So even if you have to kind of plod and poke your way around it at first, you'll eventually get it. And I think the learning curve gets ramped up really fast. You know, I don't think, because you don't have to reteach gestures, right? We know swipe up for this, swipe left for that, double tap for certain things. You might need to use two fingers or three fingers. We don't have to relearn that, right? Your daughter's not going to have to relearn that. So once you've shown her, okay, this is how you unlock it, she already knows that gesture. It's just getting past, oh, there's not a physical button thingy there anymore. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's the tapping on text now. So when you're in the, you know, the photos gallery,
same kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're just tapping on collections or select or share. You're able to sort of pinch.
Okay. Now you just made me think of a whole another potential problem, though, especially for kids, right? Because suddenly, if something doesn't necessarily look like a button, you don't have that visual indicator, and especially if you can't read. Do you know what is the right thing to, you know, because with a button, you would at least have a visual clue. Oh, it's the bottom corner. Now you've just got text down there. You don't even first know it's a button. And secondly, you can't even read maybe what it says. You know, younger children might have some issues. But again, I think it's almost a muscle memory sort of thing. Once they sort of start to figure out, and Apple does a pretty good job of trying to maintain consistency on where, you know, close things would be or share things would be. The question would be, do third-party developers glom onto and pick up that language as well?
Yeah, it's an interesting point because you've got, let's just take the photos gallery for a moment, because you've got the icons
right
along the bottom, right? You've got photos, which is like a little stacked icon. You've got the shared, which is a cloud icon. You've got albums. There is another icon. But when you're in the actual interface of the photos gallery, you know, you've got, well, let's click on collections here in text, and you're with a little a chevron next to it, or you're tapping on select. So once you hit select, then you can go through and pick the photos you want to then share to PhotoStream or what. It's that app, which should be, I mean, to me, it's beautiful. To me, it's a little busy.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry, I don't know, should I care? Well, part of my job, you know, at Fox, when I talk about technology, because I mean, your audience with whom I adore and, you know, and big fans of,
right.
I mean, your audience gets it.
They're tech savvy. I mean, yeah, they're into this stuff.
And so, but my, you know, just the general mass audience, the, you know, the millions of folks that get to, you know, tune in or jump online and whatever I'm doing, I would hear from people early on, like, this is the first time I ever understood technology, because no one at Fox was even talking about technology. And I would try to sort of not handhold in the way that app maybe kind of handhold. I mean, this is kind of what Apple was doing with this whole interface with iOS, right? Which is like, we're giving you these little icons. It's kind of how you're going to do it. And I'm just worried now as I try to explain to people that they're just going to find – there's going to be all these features that they just aren't going to understand. They're not going to know how to interact with. And I think that was part of the problem with iOS as it developed, right, from phone to phone to phone and iOS to, release to iOS to release every year. There were all of these features that I would talk to even tech-savvy people who I'd run into at the hallways who had no idea that if you just double-tap the home button and swipe to the left that you got access to all of these other features.
Yep.
They had no idea that that stuff was there. There were all – and I really think that Apple – I think Apple's dropping the ball when someone – and maybe they're changing this. Maybe you know – maybe I've forgotten this. But in their – when you're buying an iPhone now in an Apple store, there should be like a little seminar they give you. They should walk you through. You know, Apple sends out – they've just got like a few little tips in the packaging when you get the iPhone. Yeah. And it's worthless. There's so many features that they're not – and so people go out and buy the David Pogue books, you know. Like the hidden, you know, the iPhone, or what is it, the book, the instruction manual.
Missing manuals. Yeah, he does the whole missing manual series, which is great.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think Apple needs to have much more of an education here. And I think they're going to, if they think that they don't need it, I think that's a mistake.
Yeah. I mean, like when you get a Mac, right, and you go into the trackpad or mouse settings, their trackpad settings, they have those little sort of videos. And that's sort of what I was alluding to with this, is they almost probably need to have, at least in the very first screen after you upgrade, hey, here's some of the new ways you need to access stuff. Like, people aren't going to, I think, randomly discover things like the new control center. Right, that's a whole new thing, and the only way you can see it is by swiping up from the bottom of the phone. Who's going to just do that naturally unless someone tells them? Just like you were saying with the double tap of the home button.
Right, there were things I had to try to figure out and find my way around, and I didn't know. They weren't immediately obvious to me, and only because I was persistent about it, that I find them. So I don't know. I think maybe I'm not giving enough credit to people.
I do the same thing. Yeah. Are we just overthinking this, and this is not going to be a problem? I guess we're going to find out, right? Because this thing should be out. There was some debate on, are you hearing when iOS 7 will be here? Somebody threw out September 10th, and I felt like they're not going to put it out on that launch day. I figure it'll come out maybe a day or two before they actually start shipping iPhones, you know, selling iPhones at the retail store, which is, I think, historically how they've done it.
Yeah, or on the same day that they're available. Right. I know, I think last year...
It was the same day?
It was the same day, yeah, right?
I think so.
I think they'll release the Gold Master.
For developers, and then developers can get their stuff submitted into the App Store, their iOS 7 optimized apps that they've been working on, and get them ready to go before the masses get a hold of iOS 7.
Yeah. I think on that day at September 10th, we'll say we've released the Gold Master to developers today, and here you go.
Get ready.
But I don't think we're gonna. I don't think you're gonna be able to download the final version of iOS 7 that day.
I want to talk about some other things, but real quickly, just last thing on iOS 7. I'm curious to get your take on. Is there any particular beyond the UI? We talked a lot about the UI, but just in terms of features and functionality, the stuff that's actually in there as far as new features, is there any particular one that you're overly excited about? I know I have a couple of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, Control Center is a big deal. I've found that the flashlight feature is highly usable. It's kind of
having that built in. Yeah,
it's that's a great thing. Multitasking, that's been great. The music app,
the iTunes Radio.
Yeah, iTunes Radio and just the overhaul of the music app, is much needed. Safari. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I'm going through.
Yeah, my huge one is just finally not having to have Siri ever tell me, hopefully ever again, can I search the web for that? Or, search the web for that. I don't care who the search engine is. I think they're using Bing inside Safari, which should be fine. But, you know, the one of the features I was always jealous of on Android was the fact that people could use the voice controls and they could do a search, you know, the Google Now stuff, and they could say, show me images of bunny rabbits, you know, and boom, they'd have images of bunny rabbits right there on the screen. It wasn't like, oh, can you, well, I'm sorry, you have to unlock your iPhone first.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a big thing.
So you have to say, be huge for me.
The camera app too. Wicked fast, by the way.
Ooh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, really good. Especially if you've got kids and you're constantly trying to snap those photos. Just, I mean, the speed is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
From what I'm hearing.
The other huge under the hood feature I think that people aren't even going to realize is there, but is going to change their lives on a daily basis is bringing back, you know, keychain syncing with iCloud keychain. When that was lost under Mobile Me, that was a major bummer.
Yeah, I'm excited about that because I have long been railing against the wallet. I do not want to have to carry a wallet anymore. And to be able to have access to, you know, have just all my credit cards stored someplace. And of course, that opens up the whole Pandora's box about, and, you know, from what I'm hearing from my sources, this fingerprint scanner is only ready for security unlocking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as being able to have it tied into Passbook with like low energy Bluetooth, not there yet. So I think that'll be something we'll see maybe next year.
On that, have you heard any rumors or inklings of there being a developer API? Typically not out of the gate when Apple releases a feature like this, but I guess I have hopes that, you know, some of my third party apps that have secure data. I'm thinking things like 1Password and some of these other apps that have their own locking mechanisms, secondary locking mechanisms built into them. If they could be able to leverage that fingerprint scanner at some point so that I don't have to put a passcode in for those apps too, that would be really nice.
Absolutely. I think that is definitely coming. I think we saw what Apple did with, you know, was it when the 3G launched and opening that up to third parties to be able to have access to the hardware. And so, I mean, so just think about the third-party accessories market that exploded as a result of that.
Right.
Medical devices, blood pressure monitors, everything. You know, we saw them on stage showing off, you know, blood pressure monitors and all sorts of things during the 3G event. The 3G event. So I think you're definitely going to see a whole third-party market. And I wouldn't doubt – who knows if it'll be available this year, but I wouldn't doubt, you know, at CES, you're going to see an entire display on one of those press nights, you know, up close with the folks from Withings, who made the makers of the Withings scale. We're going to see all sorts of things. You know, your mind just runs wild with those sorts of ideas.
Right. Right. So I'm of the opinion this September 10th thing is all about iPhone, iOS 7, maybe some iPods. I don't know when Apple's going to do their iPod stuff. I'm assuming there'll be some updates there. Maybe they just happen quietly in the background. But I don't think we're going to see iPads. I mean, there's been some people trying to throw out that we're going to see iPads at this event. What's your take?
No way. Yeah, I've heard nothing about iPads for the September event.
September, October, we're going to get another event and we're going to talk about iPads and maybe Mavericks. And actually, have you heard when they think Mavericks might drop?
No, that's a good point. I don't know. And I really think this event will be solely around the entertainment experience.
Right.
You know, we're going to see a whole walkthrough of iOS 7. And I believe, like we always see, there's going to be one or two or even three huge features of iOS 7, the new iOS that we haven't seen yet.
Yep.
That developers will have no idea about and will get featured during this event. So I think we'll see a lot about the fingerprint scanner in the 5S. I think it's going to be, you know, we're going to see more about the iTunes overhaul and iTunes Radio and that experience and the devices. But I think the real star is going to be iOS 7. This is a huge initiative for Apple, you know, rebuilding this from the ground up. So I think we're going to see a huge push for iOS 7. I don't think we're going to see, you know, any iPads, and I don't think we're going to see anything with Mavericks. Mavericks is not going to share the stage with iPhone.
Yeah, I'm figuring, again, maybe with iPads, we'll get Mavericks and a release date on the Mac Pro, which I know a lot of people are chomping at the bit for, and Apple promised would be out this fall. And then we also have those rumors of maybe some Haswell MacBook Pros at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be an interesting couple of months, I think.
What do you think about them waiting? My bank account can't take them putting everything at the end of the year like this. I hope this is not a new trend. I hope this is just a sort of, you know, resetting of things. But if this is the new norm, I'm going to have to build myself my own little sort of Apple Fort Knox where I, you know, squirrel away just a ton of cash.
Well, that's what I did last year because I knew, I mean, when those Mac, I knew I had heard and reported that the iMacs were coming, you know, right. And I heard some fascinating specs on them. And I'm, you know, again, a photographer or a burgeoning photographer. And so I wanted a new machine. So I wanted the new 27-inch iMac for photography. And I knew it was coming. And then, of course, the one that I wanted, you know, was the last one to ship. So I had to wait till literally like New Year's Eve after Christmas before I could even like order mine and get my new 27-inch iMac. Oh,
I'm lusting after one of those. We have a aging, and it's not even that old, you know, iMac. I think it's 2010. It's just like, oh.
Yeah, I had the, I had the 2009. But boy, you know, next to the new ones, man, it's a screamer.
Well, cool. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the next big thing, you know, this whole, the rumors of smartwatch or television, but I think we're going to have to table that. I might have to get you back on in a couple months here, and we can maybe talk about that after we get through this event, because I really want to talk to you about this new hat that you're wearing as an application developer. I'm just fascinated. I'm in an iOS development group, and I haven't even gotten into doing actual iOS programming yet. I've tinkered around with it a little bit, but I haven't really done it. I do, you know, web apps, but that's a little bit different. So I'm fascinated with all these stories when I meet these folks about sort of how you have an idea. You get an idea for an app, and how does that, you know, what's the process that you go through to make that happen? So can you give everybody a little background on Read Quick, you know, what it is, what the idea is, where it came from, and what sort of started you down this process of, hey, I'm going to actually take this idea and put it in, make an app.
Yeah. You know, a few years ago, like 5 years ago now, well, for my job, you know, I try to read like hundreds, if not thousands of, maybe not thousands, but hundreds of news articles a week.
Yeah, me too.
You know, to me, yeah, with all the reporting that you're doing on your show, you know what it's like. And to be up on everything from Syria to what's happening at the Fukushima plant in Japan to
you know, have to even Apple news. Broader than I. I mean, at least I get to focus on, you know, Apple technology, right. And I can sort of silo stuff. You've got to, I can't even imagine the volumes of stuff that you have to get through.
Yeah. And so on a 4-hour broadcast, every weekend in Saturday and Sunday, I had to read copious amounts of news, and not just because of my job, but because I love it. Mm-hmm. But what if, and I've been obsessed with speed reading since I was a kid. Different mechanisms for speed reading, the most effective means of speed reading. And so there was like a web app a few years ago that I tinkered with and played with. And, you know, you could it's laid fallow for years, and you could just like copy and paste text into it. And, you know, worked okay, but was nothing to sneeze at. And I thought, once the iPad hit, when the iPad came out, I said to my wife, I've got to develop a speed reading app. And it never really occurred to me. It just didn't occur to me to put it on the iPhone at the time, or a smartphone. Just, it didn't make sense to me. So I built I came up with the idea for taking news articles, all of the news articles. If there was a way that I could just read, you know, 10 of them back to back to back, just one word at a time on the screen, really fast. Most humans read at about 250 words per minute to 300 words per minute. Pretty slowly, right? We like to verbalize every word we say. So if I'm reading a sentence, you know, Capture is a sleek audio recording wristband that allows you to save and share what was just said. You know, your mind, you're verbalizing everything to yourself.
Right.
But it turns out the brain sees words as photographs. So I always use the analogy, if you're in Times Square and you're seeing all of those billboards and colors and pictures and everything, you're not verbalizing them all, but your brain sees them all. And you can probably walk away and remember that you've seen a Victoria's Secret ad, probably first and foremost, Coca-Cola, you know, right. You've seen all of these things. So your brain sees them as photographs. And so we know this from speed reading techniques from professors. And so I began to dive into this research about how the brain sees words and comprehension. So if we could put one word up on a screen, and I thought the iPad would be the great tool for that, tie into all of our news articles so that I'm saving offline somehow. I didn't know how this was going to happen.
Sure.
And on one screen, get rid of all of the noise. I'm going to see one word at a time, and I could change the reading rate. And that's what Read Quick does. So, this was the whole process for me. I was completely ignorant of, okay, well, you need a you mean to tell me that the programmer is also not the designer?
Yeah.
Right. I had this idea of how I wanted it to look. I wanted it to be sleek. I wanted high attention to detail. I wanted to spend months and months getting this right. I wanted to be just focused on the text and get rid of all the noise. Now, how do I get my news articles in there? And how do I design this thing? So a friend of mine had mentioned a great programmer. His name is Pablo Quinteros. And anyone who wants to contact this guy, he's a genius. He also built Jimmy Fallon's app. I think it's called Wake Up with Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's built a Cloth app for iOS, another huge hit in the App Store. And so we became close friends, and he became my programmer. And halfway through the process, after a number of meetings and laid out the design, he said, you know, I can build the prototype, but then, you know, once the designer gets his hands on it, I was like, designer, you know, what do you mean? Like, aren't you going to do it? You know, I didn't realize, I mean, I was completely ignorant that, you know, even Marco Arment, creator of Instapaper, you know, he revealed that he didn't design Instapaper. He programmed it. He had to bring in a design house to come up with design elements.
Yeah.
And build the icons, build the look of it. You know, he didn't lay it all out that way. He certainly knew how he wanted it all to look, but he didn't build the design.
I'm chuckling because, you know, I can tell you from experience, I actually have a design background. So I'm one of those programmers who I can make something, you know, look fairly decent. I come from a traditional print background. That's what I studied in school. So I did page layout for an ad agency, and I would lay out ads and print stuff. But I'm, you know, as I've moved and transitioned to become a web programmer and a developer, I'm the first person to recognize that that's where my passion is, right? A lot of this comes down to where your passion is. And so, yeah, I can put stuff on a screen and have it look pretty good, but I know there's a lot of guys out there that can make it look a lot better.
Right.
And especially when it comes, in my opinion, when it comes to a crowded market, you know, as iOS apps are, you really have to take those steps to make sure that your stuff's going to stand out. And that was, as I was saying at the top of the show, when we formed this sort of iOS group, we really wanted to be conscious of the fact that there's multiple disciplines. If you really want to be successful at this, you really want to make it work, you want to have the best possible app you have, you want to have the best possible chance to market it, you really need to find almost a team of people.
Right.
And so it's great to hear you talk about sort of that process you went through. I'm curious, you know, where did you even start to sort of find those people? Because I get that question asked to me all the time. It's like, that's great, Adam. I understand it. I get that. That makes sense. But, you know, I'm just one guy. How do I know, you know, where am I going to go? How do I find these people?
Right. I mean, honestly, I think how a lot of things happen, it's word of mouth.
Yeah.
You find out, you know, when I was young, I was obsessed with television and working in the broadcast business and, you know, the things I would hear from people. In fact, David Letterman had once given me advice and basically said, you know, you don't have to blaze the trail. There are a lot of other people who have done this kind of work, you know, figure out how they've done it and just find them and follow in their footsteps. So the team from Wondersauce is the design team. Mm-hmm. I ran into Eric Mayville, who he just happened to be a friend of a friend. And we were having we had like a cookout at our building in Manhattan. Turns out he built Engadget's website and did all sorts of great design work and showed me some of the stuff. And he had said, hey, he was a fan of mine. He recognized, you know, knew me from the tech world. And he was a fan of my wife's from CNET and was very familiar with us. And he watched her show Loaded on CNET mm-hmm. every morning. Saw me on Twit here and there, and we became friends. And turns out he worked in a little design house of like three people called Wondersauce. And now they've got people all over, you know, all over the country. They've grown, I think, to like 15 people or so. You know, exploded. They've got like HBO under their belts now. They've got, you know, Michelob or Anheuser-Busch. Sorry, I mean, they have a whole Stella Artois. They have like all kinds of big clients and ReadQuick. So Eric said about he immediately got we went to coffee. I told him the idea and he just, you know, those people that have like their 10,000 hours of design, mm-hmm. or that's their 10,000 hours in a skill set. He just immediately got it. And he just started laying out, just sitting there with an iPad. He just started kind of drawing on paper and on the iPad just how he thought it would look. And I'm like, that's exactly the way I see it. You know, that's exactly the way I see it. And that's how it happened. I mean, just literally word of mouth. But I think just a cursory search for quality iOS designers can really point you in the right direction. You can start to get references. And I've actually provided a lot of references. I mean, I think that's the key, right? I'm not afraid to tell other people what a good experience I've had with them. So right. They referred me, you know, a lot of people have asked, you know, well, hey, do you mind if I jump on the phone with you? We're thinking about hiring Wondersauce as a design firm for our new campaign. We're a watch company. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience? And I'm happy to jump on the phone. I've talked to like 6 or 7 different referrals now on the phone.
It's interesting you mentioned the phone, because that's the other thing I want to talk to you about a little bit with your experience and process, you know, going through this. Because another thing, I'm heavily involved with my user groups. I make no secret about it on the show. It's part of the reason I do the show is because it's like my version of a user group just to a right. broader audience. But you know, the key difference between the physical user group and like what I do on the show is face-to-face contact. You mentioned phone calls. And I'm curious, how much of your networking and collaboration and meeting and sort of finding the right people was purely, you know, online and sending out emails versus actually, you know, sitting down with someone, meeting with someone, calling someone up on the phone and having a more, because I think those are more intimate forms of communication, even just a phone call, which I think it's becoming this lost art. Everybody's, you know, text and email, that's all I need. And I meet these, you know, we'll have people who have ideas, they come to our group and they're like, well, I just, you know, I've been struggling. I've been trying to go online to, you know, there's these services where you can hire, you know, programmers and coders and stuff like that. And they're like, it's really not working. And I just keep coming back going, yeah, it's not working, because while you might be able to find someone there, you still need to get on a phone and have a phone call. You've got to have, you know, there's a more visceral connection that needs to happen that I think is becoming this sort of lost art.
I really agree with you. I mean, I think people have got to have that interpersonal communication, and it just elevates the relationship. Yeah. I mean, I had, you know, lunch last week with a friend. He created Engadget, Peter Rojas, mm-hmm. Created GDGT. We sat down and had lunch last week, and I hadn't seen him in a few months, and we just caught up. You know, we had dinner a few months before that, or almost like a year ago now. And we were like, it was way too long. So we sat down and had lunch, and we just had a great time. But as a result of that, we're working on a partnership with something. I mean, he's at AOL now, and with ReadQuick, I'd love to do something special with AOL News inside of ReadQuick to give people like a pure news source inside, mm-hmm. you know, inside of it. So we're talking about that, and, you know, just, and it may not come to fruition. I'm hoping that it does, but that wasn't the reason for the meeting.
Exactly.
You know,
you're exactly making my point. You know, it's just networking goes beyond, and it's not saying that you can't do this stuff online. I know there's entire companies that have been successful that formed by people online, but I bet you if you even asked them, yeah, we initially all hooked up online, at some point they got together in the same room or they met or you know, and that absolutely. Just elevated the relationship and what they were able to do. And it just irks me when I get all these people who think, oh, I can just stay in my little silo and I never have to go anywhere and I never have to talk to anybody. But I just think it makes these things better. So it was great to hear you, you know, sort of mentioned that, you know, a part of that networking process is just going through, you know, people you know, and you never know who might connect you to someone else. So maybe it might not be that immediate connection, but maybe that's the person that knows about the guy that's in California that you can have an email thread with and start something up.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that, I mean, if I look at the partnerships, the building of ReadQuick, you know, I had a phone conversation with Pablo for the first time. And then, you know, as the programmer, we sat down and had lunch from there. Then Eric was a face-to-face. I mean, if I look at the featured partner section of ReadQuick, and you know, my featured partners, I have like Macworld in there, by the way. So every day you can get, you know, free Macworld articles right in ReadQuick and speed read through those, TechHive. That's because I'm friends with Jason Snell from Macworld and, you know, met him face-to-face a number of times and had great conversations. I'm thinking about the other featured partners in there, like Talking Points Memo. These are from personal phone conversations and face-to-face meetings. I mean, that's the reason that Tech Meme is in there, you know, and all of those, like, little design flares are in there because of face-to-face interpersonal communication. You can't. It just goes such a long way when you have lunch with somebody.
Yeah. It's like a huge deal. So I just wanted to point that out. So you had this idea, you mentioned it's sort of been brewing for a long time. When you actually sort of sat down and went, okay, I see the technology, the iPad's there, I think I can make this happen. From sort of that moment where, like, I'm going to hire some people, I'm going to get this thing off the ground, about how long was that process, and did it take a lot longer than you thought, or how did that go about?
My first real decision about it, I said to my wife, yeah, this is something I think I really want to do. And then I was at CES 2011. Yeah, 2011. And had run into a friend, and I said, you know, because he had just launched Cloth, his app. And I said, I was kicking around this idea for a long time. And, you know, because he was just telling me about Cloth. And I said, well, you know, I have this idea for an app. It's a speed reading app. There's nothing like it in the App Store. And, you know, if there was, then I wouldn't be doing it, maybe, unless, you know, it was designed poorly. But there's nothing. There was nothing like it. Now there's a clone that just came out actually last week. And so people were tweeting me about it, telling me, like, hey, isn't this just a ripoff of your app? But there was nothing like it. And so I said to him, you know, who do you recommend? So this was CES 2011. Again, a face-to-face meeting. Personal. We had like drinks and hung out, and he recommended Pablo and his programmer, an honest, forthright guy that, you know, just works very, very hard and does just such great work. And he's just all about killing bugs and making sure that the app just works so smoothly like butter. So I said, all right. And like a week later, or when I got back to New York, I called him, had lunch. So from January until launch in September. So the prototyping, building out, testing, designing, all of that. You know, we probably could have launched in early summer, but there was no rush. And
yeah, well, so about 9 months from idea to actually having something in the App Store.
Roughly. Yeah. And then, you know, when I mentioned not thinking that it was worthy of the iPhone. So then I did and here's another tip for developers. And I think this is something you can really grapple with, right? You got this great product, you think it's awesome, and you really want to get out there and tell everyone about it. I think the success of ReadQuick and the reason that it got, you know, to the top of like the What's Hot section of the iTunes store, and it's been in like the top 10, it's been in the top 10 of the news section now for like almost a year, is because we soft launched it. Well, I launched it in September. And I launched it with Instapaper, and Marco Arment was kind enough to partner with me again after a lunch with Marco. We had a, you know, great discussion about it, and he really believed in the app, and we partnered and launched it exclusively with Instapaper at first, and worked out all these bugs, all these things. But we soft launched it. I didn't tell a soul about it. So launched it in the App Store, and it sold. No, okay. I didn't tell anyone about it. No one. No press at all. Until, you know, all the feedback I was seeing from people was like, you know, hey, I love Instapaper, but I'm a Pocket user. So then I said, okay, we got to build Pocket in here. We got to do a bunch of other things. Why doesn't this work the way that I want it to? This, you know, now that I've been using it and all these people are giving us great feedback, we just started compiling all this feedback. And we started using a Trello board. And it's a great, you know, it's a great app, by the way, if you're into development, to use Trello.
Okay.
You can really lay out, like, prioritize the things that you want to tackle. And you pretty quickly realize there are things you don't, you have to be talked down off of ledges, I find.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm like, you know, I'd love it if it shot, you know, like a canister to the moon, you know, on my
it's funny. Like, it's funny you mentioned that. I'm involved in several projects with, you know, idea guys, and idea guys are awesome, right? They have a lot of great ideas. That's why they're awesome. But yeah, it's very often the programmer and the designer's job. This is why you need a team of people, right? To sort of talk those guys down and go, okay, like, that's great. Let's, you know, vet that later. We've got to focus on, you know, this thing now, the core functionality. Yeah. Let's get something and then we'll tackle that, you know, but you don't want to necessarily throw those ideas away either. I've heard too many stories where people would, you know, sort of dismiss those ideas. So it's this balance, right? And that's sort of why you want this team of people.
And so we, you know, we soft launched and waited and waited and waited, built in Pocket. And then we finally relaunched in December officially. So in December of 2011, and then, you know, took off. Like Gruber featured it on Daring Fireball. All these, you know, a lot of people wrote about it. It was featured, you know, Mashable. You know, had a chance to talk about it on Twit. But it was sort of this organic thing. Callie Lewis did a whole video and feature on it, which I was so touched by. And, you know, just it took off and you know.
So I got to bring up some, because you're mentioning some big names in there, right? You're mentioning Gruber, you mentioned the guys at Macworld and Callie Lewis, and, you know, and in our little tech circle, these are pretty big people. And so there's probably going to be some people that are going to say, well, you know, of course, you're Clayton Morris, you're on Fox, you know, you knew all these people, you had these connections and things like that. But I think I've known you long enough to know that was something that you were passionate about, and you sort of actively became involved in this community. It wasn't just suddenly like you knew all these people, right? This was a process of years of reaching out and, again, going to conferences and meeting people and stuff like that. And so I get a lot of developers that are like, well, you know, I don't know any of these people. And I just thought, but you could. You know, it doesn't take all that much effort to shoot someone an email or to walk up to someone at a conference and say, hey, I've been working on this app. Would you mind taking a look at it? You know,
yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And I think the thing that people make, you know, sales, here's a little secret from the world of sales. Chet Holmes, one of the greatest salesmen of all time, has written an incredible book on it. I would encourage anybody who is, needs to do sales to check out Chet Holmes' book. And one of the points that he makes is that it takes 8 points of interaction to close a sale. But very often people will get so discouraged, right? You'll cold call someone and, you know, they sort of reject you, or they just like don't return your call. And I'm not going to try that person. But if you build in to your process that you know that it's going to take 8 points of interaction before you can seal that deal, then you don't worry about getting rejected on the first time. You're not even rejected, but just spend, you know, doing the long game. Like if you're interested in developing these relationships, do it legitimately first.
Right.
But, you know, just
you
got to
be honest about it, too. Yeah, that's interesting you say legitimate, because that's the other thing is, you know, you don't want to be annoying and berate these people either. They're busy. They have lives. You have to be conscious of that.
Yeah. I mean, no one wants to be just flooded with press releases. And so I think the mistake that people make in this digital world on social media is that they try to seal the deal on the first interaction. Right. They'll try to like reach out to, someone at, you know, Macworld or other place, and they'll try to say, hey, I've got this app. Can you check it out? I'm a fan of, you know, I'm a fan of your website. Can you check it out? And I mean, they get flooded with that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
But by reaching out legitimately and developing a relationship and engaging with writers and bloggers and so forth. And look, I think it only goes so far, though. I honestly believe like the press bump you may get on that first day and having all your ducks in a row. So when I launched the iPhone version, I said, you know what? I didn't do a good enough job of this when we launched the iPad version. So now the iPhone version comes out about a week ago. And I really wanted to make sure that I had done my homework, and I did it, you know, mostly myself. But that is to reach out to the right people to make sure that all of the ducks were lined up before iOS 7 comes out. Everything is done. It's as good as it can be. All of the people who were bugging me about an iPhone version for a year and saying, I really think this. So, just doing your homework ahead of time. Not waiting until the last minute, because with the way the iTunes store works, or where the App Store works, is, you know, it's a lot of momentum. So it's about keeping that momentum. And the press stuff is fine, but very often there's very little press for a lot of these app launches that do really well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can only go so far with the press. That's a very minimal amount of time. You really have to then try to figure out how you're going to then interact with people online through social media, create these relationships. For instance, with ReadQuick, I found out really something special about it is that folks who have dyslexia have been writing me over the past 2 years saying that this app has changed their life. This is the first time they've been able to read the news.
Wow.
Because it gets rid of word noise. They're able to read news for the first time on a device. And I had no idea that that would be a benefit of this app. So I began to reach out to the dyslexic community, and not to try to sell them the app, because I don't care about that. You know, I never did this for money anyway. I did it because I wanted this for myself.
There's something you wanted, yeah.
Yeah, so like I made
your,
to reach out.
Your job easier, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and so, yeah, I spent all my savings on the app, of course. And so, you know, like, no money left in my bank account, but it wasn't about the money. And so I began to reach out to folks in this, dyslexic community and find out how I could make the app better. You know, finding out different typefaces and font, and different fonts, and how words could stagger if it was 15 characters or longer. How could it pause for them? And so, I began to try to develop those relationships. And, it's great. Maybe they'll post it in their newsletter to, their folks. I don't know. I don't care. As long as I got the feedback and I knew I was doing well by them, it's the long game.
Right.
Maybe a year from now, there might be an article and they'll want to interview me for an article about this thing that might be able to help that community. Great. No, I don't care. But if it does, that's great. And maybe, I'll sell a few apps as a result of it. But at the end of the day, I'm glad I can help people with it. And that was really amazing ancillary benefit. I know you've done a number of Maccasts about accessibility features.
Yep.
How important that is. And it was such a touching. I received one email, the first one I got. Actually, I think Gruber got it and forwarded it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Wow, check this out." And I had no idea. It just sort of blew me away. And I got tears in my eyes, because it was such a touching email. And I forwarded it to my mom, who's devoted her whole life to social work. She helps people with disabilities. And my mom was like, she might not be impressed with other stuff I do, but I was like, "Mom, check this out." I said, actually, really touched that I was able to help somebody in that way. And that was more powerful than anything else,
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I get those emails and voicemails from people quite frequently, and it's always an amazing thing. And it's just, this is stuff that we do because we love it. We love doing it and sharing it. And you had, this thing that you wanted for yourself, and you shared it with the world and you created it. And, that's just amazing. I think there's too many people that sort of see the apps and the app store and this stuff as, like the next gold rush. We're going to jump in there. We're just going to throw something together. We're going to make a bunch of money and we're going to get out.
Yeah.
But I think, the people who are being really successful at it and have the best apps and are getting the most exposure are really in there for, like you said, this long game, right? This is a bigger thing. We want to be app, you want to be app developers. You want to make your app better, or you want to do this so you can get onto that next idea that you might have.
Right? Yeah. And there's no shame in the marketing, right? There's no shame in the marketing side of it. To your point early on in the show about what was the acronym?
It's ICAM. Yeah. Ideas, coding, art, and marketing.
And marketing, a huge part of it, right? You have to be smart with it. So I've started a little AdWords campaign on Google. I'm trying to target, trying to be very smart about it. But you really have to stay on top of it. You have to have a plan. So I'm staying on top of it. That's what I meant about being really smart this time with the iPhone launch. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the data, and I'm trying to buy ads. you know, like I said, I've depleted my savings. So like what little money I make back, I'm trying to like focus that money again, really smart, trying to find other people who could really benefit from the app and targeting those people and seeing if they're finding, you know, and finding the benefit. And the reviews have been great so far. I think it's upwards of 4 or 4.5 stars on the iTunes store app right now. And so
I've had it for a long time and I show it to people all the time and they're just blown away. You know, you try to describe it, but people have to see it, right? I mean, you kind of got to see it to really, I think, ultimately get it. It makes sense, but it's sort of just like, it's almost like watching a movie to a certain degree. You know, you're reading, but you are, each word is sort of becomes this image, you know, one after another, like frames. And at first I thought, there's no way, you know, there's going to be any kind of comprehension behind this. Like it's just flashes, right?
Right. And then once you realize that, oh my God, my comprehension has gone up.
Right.
And I'm reading this way. And I love watching people's jaws drop when I show it to them. Like they'll stand there and say, what do you mean you made an app? I'm like, well, just take a look at this. I want to see what you think. And literally like they're and I say this with all as humble as possible. Like I'll see my friends, you know, who've never seen it before, who's just like mouths open. And they're like, oh, my God, I'm understanding that. Holy crap, that's crazy. You know, and I get so happy. Like, yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm the little boy from Reading, Pennsylvania. Here's my app.
I'm not very fast yet. I was a little disheartened to hear that you said, you know, most people can read at 250 to 300 because I think that's about where my speed is right now. But I'm trying to get better.
Try to amp it up because when, like I mentioned, my friend Peter Rojas, he told me he was beta testing for a while. And he said, yeah, I'm over 600. And I'm like, oh, really? I'm only at 450 and I created this thing. And he was over 600. I've had a guy write me last week after the iPhone version launched. And he said, why did you stop at 800 words per minute? That's the upper limit. We made a ceiling of 800 words per minute. He said, I'm already at 800 words a minute. I'm like, you're kidding me. And I wrote him back and I said, to be honest with you, we didn't think it was humanly possible. But it's something we'll consider in a future update, increasing the read rate. He said, would you consider going up to 1,000 or even 1,500? I was like, oh, my God, man.
It's like superhuman levels.
Yeah, he's going through 50.
What are you, from Krypton?
Exactly. He's going through like 50-minute articles that you would normally take to read 50 minutes on a New Yorker piece. He's going through them in 5 minutes, you know, or less. You know, it's absurd.
Really,
it's
cool.
Insane.
And I love the stats are in there so you can get it. You know, you can figure out how much you've read and how quickly you're reading. And
yeah,
there's a lot of cool little extras in there, you know.
I will say iOS 7 has opened up a Pandora's box of there were all, just speaking of the features that I wanted in there that we had to shelve
right
because of iOS 7 and what we uncovered at WWDC, we are fast at work at some really exciting new features thanks to what Apple has done with table view, the scrolling and all sorts of great things and text rendering. We're able to do some really impressive things.
Cool. So I'll look forward to my future updates.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're working on books next. We've been working on books now for quite a while. Doctors have been asking for PDFs. We're fast at work at that. Very, very difficult. PDFs are a beast.
Yes.
Marco even warned me 2 years ago. He said, of Instapaper, he said, you know, just PDFs are a nightmare. And he's right. They absolutely are. And we are about to, very, very close to integrating with Evernote. So Evernote will be next on the plate. There's a little sneak peek for the
cool
Madcast listeners. Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate that. You know, people should definitely check out the app. They should check out what you're up to. And I think we can close it out here. The app, it's called Read Quick. You just put out, so it was for iPad. You have a new iPhone version out right now, just released. So you can get it on both platforms.
Yeah, same price, universal. So,
it is universal.
Yep. We thought, well, maybe we'll charge separately. It's a different platform, you know, and then we just decided, no, we'll make it free
for that's awesome.
People who bought it on the iPad.
Awesome. Awesome. So people can check that out. It's in the App Store. Also, is it Read Quick app?
Yeah, the website is readquickapp.com. Yeah.
Okay. And they can check you out on Fox. Also, you're on all kinds of podcasts. What are you up to podcast-wise these days? Still Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe going?
Yeah, that's strong? The big one. I mean, nowhere near as lengthy as yours for years doing, but we're upwards of 6 years now doing the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. It's a nerd fest. So me and my best friend, Mike, and if you love just talks about, you know, Star Trek or
I was gonna say you guys just did a Star Trek review, right?
Yeah, in fact, we're doing our Summer of Trek. So we're watching all of the Star Trek films from motion picture on up to this week. We are doing Star Trek Generations. This is the, of course, the introduction of the Next Generation crew. And at the end of it all, we're hopefully going to have some big Star Trek stars on the show, namely, well, not from the show, but from the movie, J.J. Abrams. So we're building up to that as the fall wraps up here in just a few weeks. But yeah, Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, it's just a lot of fun. We just talk nerd stuff and, you know, superheroes and Superman, Batman, Iron Man, Starbucks.
You're all over Twitter if people want to follow you. Great stuff, you know, yeah. Up on technology, all kinds of things. So they should follow along, I guess. And then next week we've got the event. So I'm totally excited about September 10th at this point.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait. And I'll be live tweeting and you know, following it as much as I can in coverage on Fox and showing you the ins and outs of iOS 7 and whatever the phones will bring. I'll have all of those reviews up there as well. And I can't wait to come back on the show, Adam, and talk the next big thing. I mean,
let's talk about the next big thing. I have this whole thing I've been doing on with smartwatches. I got myself a Pebble just because I wanted to see what this was all about or if this wasn't even a thing. But We'll spend another hour talking about that if I get into
it. I would love to. Yeah,
I'm going to let you go. It's getting late out on the East Coast. But thank you so much, man, for coming and hanging out for an hour or so.
You bet. Thanks so much, Adam. Thanks to all your listeners as well. You guys are great.
So there you go, Clayton Morris. Are you guys getting excited? I am super excited about next week. I can't wait to see what Apple has to show us, the actual stuff, not just the rumors. We won't have to be talking about rumors anymore. So next MacCast, we will be talking about all of the announcements, what Apple said at the event, and maybe some of the upcoming things that we think are going to happen later in the year. I want to thank Clayton Morris again for coming out and hanging out with us for a little bit. Be sure to check out his app, also his podcasts. You can also catch him on the weekends, Fox and Friends Weekend. He is a co-host there. And that is going to do it for this episode. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors. Smile, they make PDF Pen, PDF Pen Pro 6 for the Mac, as well as Text Expander and Disk Label. Also check out Text Expander Touch and PDF Pen for iOS. Awesome applications. You can find out all the information you need over at smilesoftware.com. Gazelle, it's the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, your iPad, or other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And don't forget, lock in the pricing on your iPhones until October 15th. So head over there right now. Don't delay. Transporter by Connected Data. You can get all the benefits of cloud storage with the control and security of a physical hard drive or NAS. Great little product. You can get 10% off your own personal cloud by using the code MacCast over at filetransporter.com/MacCast. And Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial or 20% off this month only, go over to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacCast9. And a huge thank you to all of my sponsors for supporting the show. Big thank you to you for listening, for staying subscribed. Tell all your friends about the MacCast. Let's grow this community. If you have a comment for me, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails to maccast@gmail.com. You can also leave voicemail on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. And be sure to check out the MacCast website. There you'll find show notes with links to everything that I've talked about on this episode or any other episode of the MacCast. That's at maccast.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the forum. I've actually been plugging the forum. There's a lot of great answers and conversations happening on the MacCast forum at forum.maccast.com. Free to sign up, free to participate. It's another great extension of this awesome community we have. So if you're not taking advantage of that, please do. Also take advantage of all of the social media communities we have going. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or find us on the MacCast Google Plus community. If you're on Google Plus, sign up for the MacCast community, and there's some great conversation and postings going on there as well. And so that's everything that's happening. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.